from across the Volunteer State, the countdown to kickoff with your exclusive scouting report. Welcome to the Coach's Meeting. Coach to Coach.
Vols and Ohio State will play in the first 12-team college football playoff matchup. Let's forget all the angst about the playoffs for just a minute. Two perennial powers in this game, two great brands, Columbus, December night game. Doug, it all adds up to kind of a fun matchup.
I love night games. We've talked in previous shows a little bit about that. I love night games. I think it's going to be a great ball game and a lot of people watching it. And this, I think, is what the folks who looked at expanding this playoff, this is what they had in mind. It just works out that, you know, this year Ohio State was number 8, Tennessee was number 9, so they're playing in Ohio State. But get ready for this. We're going to be seeing this in future games.
Well, this is exactly what they had in mind, just like Coach says. I mean, the eyeballs for this and the interest for this going up. The other thing is the lag time between the regular season and once the playoffs start. That only builds the anticipation. And you've got two national brands. I mean, the Big Ten and the SEC, we know that those guys are the monsters of what's going on and were the genesis for starting this whole thing that we've talked about with the playoffs. But you've got two prominent teams from both of those entities. This is going to be a lot of fun.
So here we are almost a week later, and the things that will be fixed category as we talk about the playoffs, which really means, of course, adjusted to fit the desires of the big two conferences. First of all, conference champions automatically getting a bye. Do you think that's gone?
Well, I don't think not necessarily. I don't think so. They still have another year to go of this. This is the first iteration. Now, there's been controversy. You knew that was going to be expected. I think it will be modified, though, but I don't think it necessarily says that it's immediately going to change. No.
Well, let's go back and look at when this was all put together, when the talk began in earnest from going from a 4-team to either an 8-team or a 12-team or whatever. You know, at that time, we had 5 power conferences. And to get everybody together, this is the only way that the committee, the playoff committee, could put this together because you still had a strong Pac-12. It was before the expansion of the Big Ten and the Southeastern Conference. Adjustments are going to have to be made. They were going to have to be made anyway. Learning experience. I don't know. They said going in that they would keep it this way for the first 2 years for sure. We will see. They always have the ability to change that. But I think in the end, one of the big pushes is going to be, and Larry, you're exactly right, it's going to be, the decision is going to be made by the commissioner of the Southeastern Conference and the Big Ten. That's who's going to make this decision. And I think eventually we may get to where you go ahead and have your conference championship games. I don't think those will go away because they are such huge money makers. And you can incorporate that into part of the playoffs, I think. But I do think eventually they'll look at, okay, we got our 12 teams. Let's not have any seeding, for conference champions. I think they'll just see them the way they fall. And the talk is, and I think it'll go to this very, very quickly, probably going to have 14 teams or even 16 teams before it's all said and done.
The biggest debate, of course, has been SMU and Alabama. I did find it a bit disingenuous that Alabama's athletic director said he would reconsider the scheduling model. I mean, come on, let's be honest. It is still important who you lose to. Alabama's loss to Oklahoma is really the issue here.
Well, and we know that the not only the head football coach, but the president of the school, the chancellor of the school, and the athletic director—they get paid by the university that they're representing on that. But you're exactly right. I mean, every one of these teams, except for Oregon. Oregon is the only team. I can't think of another year where at the end of the year there's only one undefeated team in the whole country. That was Oregon. So everybody had an opportunity to win games to get in there. I say everybody. Certainly probably the top 18, 20 teams when it was all said and done. You win get your games, at least the key games, in the regular season, you're going to be there. So I agree with that. But again, it's kind of, you know, folks that follow college basketball know it's the same thing. They argue about the 64th, 5th, and 6th team that get in there. So we might as well get used to that.
Everybody's not going to agree, but I do agree with you, Larry, on this. Who you lose to is still very, very important. And I, you know, Alabama can be upset, and I can see why they're upset. But the way to do that, to stay away from that upset feeling, don't get beat by those teams. I mean, that to me was the major issue there. You're not going to have agreement across the board. You never are. And this was always going to have some controversy in it. But to this point with Alabama, when you say you lost to Oklahoma, that hurt them.
Well, and one quick thing on this too. When you're right on that edge of getting in, maybe the first team in or the first team out, when these championship games make a difference. If Clemson does not win that ball game, the ACC championship, Alabama's in. If SMU doesn't play that game really close going down to the last play, Alabama's in. But that's not the way it played out.
Well, and here's the thing. You can certainly ding SMU's schedule. I don't think there's any reason to deny that. But if the committee was going to do that, that should have been happening in the weeks before the final ranking. It didn't, and so they weren't going to.
Well, I firmly believe that that's absolutely true. They should have absolutely done that before the final ranking.
Well, one thing to remember, the college football playoff committee, they change from year to year. The people who are on that, not all of them, but some rotate on, some rotate off. And there are really no qualifications. Nor is there a roadmap for the way that you're supposed to pick these teams. It really gets down to individual preference. Obviously, you have to have conference championships and things like that. But, Larry, I think you're right. We had six of these college football playoff polls, the last being after the conference championship games. We talked about them every single week on this. And you would think that they would look at it the same way on all six polls. And it's very difficult. It would be very difficult at the end of the fifth poll, when you're only going to have championship games after that, to move teams up or down who did not play in the championship game. But that's what happened in this instance.
Good point, Doug. And, you know, the college basketball system is the same way. Every year, things get valued slightly different. So we'll see how it plays out. It is fun, though, to have the 12 teams. Now we are in the postseason. For the last several years, you've had four teams that participated in a playoff. Now it's 12. So, Dave, look back through your NFL experiences. What's the difference in preparation between regular season football and playoff football?
Well, Larry, the prep for unknown opponents is the primary difference. That's a huge difference. Analysts now have to start prep on several scenarios. Coaches have to concentrate on the present. Film breakdown or analysis has to be prepared for numerous opponents that you could play. And then once you start to narrow that down, after the job at hand has been done, then the coaches can start looking at what the analysts have prepared for. One opponent, two opponent, three opponents, and you start narrowing that down until you know exactly who your opponent's going to be. But that even in the first ball game, you are expecting to win that ball game, and then you're looking ahead to that next opponent. So this is a big job for the analytical department right now. Whoever's breaking your tape down, it's the same way it was in the National Football League, they are working ahead to unknown opponents. That's a huge difference than just going week to week to week on known opponents.
Well, no team in this playoff has the excuse of not being ready. Every single team that is going to be playing now will have right at 3 weeks to work on that. So you can get everybody healthy. Going to your point about being able to look at tape, you know who you're going to be playing, and you know who the one or two teams are going to be that if you win that you're going to be playing on that. So every one of these teams should be raring to go, should be healthy as they can be. The only players that won't be playing are the ones that are out for the year. You know who you're going to be playing. You got every single tape on that team that they played that year. You know, the coaches, so it should be a very well-prepared game from both teams' aspect.
This is Coach to Coach with former University of Tennessee defensive coordinator Doug Matthews and former NFL defensive coordinator and head coach Dave McGinnis, driven by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office. In Tennessee, fans don't let fans drive drunk.
When the arena lights dim for a concert, or when the crowd becomes one at a big game, you can almost feel like you're the biggest fan. But who's your biggest fan? It's the person that will get you home safely after a night of drinking. It's the person who looks out for your life to make sure you leave the stadium with someone sober. This could be a designated driver or someone who offers to get you a rideshare. because in Tennessee, fans don't let fans drive drunk. Brought to you by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office, a division of the Tennessee Department of Safety and Homeland Security.
You know, starting to save for your future doesn't have to be difficult. Let Wilson Bank and Trust help tone up your financial goals this year. Our certificates of deposits or CDs can help your money work harder with our competitive rates, earning you more than ever before. WBT checking options allow you to earn rewards you can really use, like a high interest rate or cash back on check card purchases when you meet some e-banking qualifications. Visit your closest Wilson Bank and Trust office or online at wilsonbank.com to get started today. Member FDIC.
Tis the season for all of my favorite treats. Now, where are Grandma's homemade holiday cookies? Hold up. Where are Grandma's cookies?
Easy, Joe. Grandma brought something even sweeter this season.
Your triple fudge brownies?
No, Joey. Holiday instant games from the Tennessee Lottery.
Made from scratch holiday wins? Grandma, you're a genius.
Give the gift of holiday instant games topped with sweet cash prizes only from the Tennessee Lottery. Oh, what game-changing fun. Please play responsibly.
When it's time for the big game, big fans need big TVs. And at Double Dogs, you can even satisfy big appetites. With choices like black Angus burgers, wings tossed in homemade sauces, and dog bowl nachos, well, Double Dogs will make sure you get the fuel you need for lunch, dinner, or even a post-game snack. So whether you have two legs or four, you can cheer on and chow down at Double Dogs. Visit DoubleDogs.biz to view the menu and order online. Double Dogs, sit, stay, eat.
This edition of Coach to Coach, we explore the season lessons for 10-2 Tennessee, 7-0 at home. Why don't we start there? Because you're supposed to win at home. But, Doug, look at it. Only four SEC teams won all of their home games this season.
A 10-2 SEC team is most likely going to get in the playoffs. So, how do you do that? You win your four home games, and then you have to go at least 2-2 on the road games in this conference. And it is tough to win in this conference. Look at the teams that lost on the road that are in the playoffs right now. You know, Alabama is a good example. They didn't make the playoffs. Why? Because they lost on the road. They defended at home, but they got beat on the road by a team that they should have outplayed. Why? Because it's a tough place to play. Any place you play in this league is on the road. You're going into a tough environment.
Well, it's hard to win anywhere in the SEC. Some places more than others, but you have less distractions also when you're playing at home. The home field crowds are significant in the Southeastern Conference. You must use that to your advantage. Home field advantage in the Southeastern Conference, I think, probably trumps home field advantages in most every other major conference in this country, just because of the massive, massive participation of crowds. You never see a home crowd in the Southeastern Conference that is not full, ever. And especially once you get going into those night games, you've got to use that to your advantage.
Well, let's focus then on the need to win the big road games. That has been an issue the last several years under Josh Heupel. The Vols win at Oklahoma. They lose at Arkansas. They lose at Georgia. Dave, did you see progress in that regard?
Well, yeah, a little bit. But the time of year and when that team plays and falls on your schedule is very, very important, too. I think if you look at those ball games also, the health of your team at the time that you play a significant team on the road, that makes a big difference. But the number one thing that is so important, especially as the grind of a season goes on, when you're in a conference like the SEC, experience on your roster helps a whole lot. That is what you need. That is why most coaches, even with a transfer portal, even with bringing new players in every year, experience in this league really helps when you go into those environments on the outside. I thought Tennessee did a better job of it this year, but I think they themselves will say they did not do as good a job at Arkansas, especially, as they should have done, being ready to go on the road in that environment.
And the top teams did that, but that is when you just look at Coach Heupel's tenure there. Now, I'll give him the first year because they had a lot of players leave on that. Second year, they win 10 ball games. But again, you're going to have to beat. If you're going to play, and let's just look at Tennessee, but every team has this. Every year, you're going to either play Georgia on the road or Alabama on the road. All right. Now, when we get into the new schedule, that may change a little bit. You're going to play one of the top contenders on the road. And if you're going to be competing for an SEC championship at Tennessee, you're going to have to beat some of those teams on the road.
So let's focus in on the Tennessee offense. And the word around this offense in 2024, guys, inconsistent?
No, absolutely. I think that's the word, because the passing game never was consistently threatening enough. The defense and the run game this year carried this football team. Now, the quarterback and the wide receiver connections and their consistency, they were an issue at times. When they were on, you could see that it was ginning, it was clicking, but it wasn't consistent enough. And I think that's where the inconsistent part comes in, is in the passing game.
Well, I'm going to be a little contrarian here. I think their offense was very consistent, at least as the start of the game. The first half, they didn't score any points. They were consistently not scoring points in the first half, at least in the Southeastern Conference game. So you can take that any way you want to go. But from a offensive standpoint, there were a very few games where Tennessee scored even one touchdown in SEC games. So from that standpoint, I'd say they were very consistent.
Nico's progression, let's just go from August to November. I think he made progress a lot. And he made progress, but he's still not consistent enough in the routine processing of operating this offense. The growth and composure, and the thing people need to realize, this is still a very young quarterback with high expectations on him. But his growth and composure, I really believe, was witnessed. Consistent accuracy is still a work in progress.
Couple areas in particular. Number one, the poise in the pocket, his poise in the pocket, where you have to have poise as a quarterback. And I think he really improved. A lot of it has to do with his play, getting hit and getting injured. I think his poise as a leader also affected not only this offense, but this whole University of Tennessee football team. And quite frankly, that's what you have to have out of your quarterback, because that team is going to follow the quarterback one way or the other, either from a positive standpoint or a negative standpoint.
Yeah, and the quarterback needs to take another step in the overall command of the flow when working the offense. And the consistent flow of the offense is the next step for any quarterback. And that's what they have to do. Quicker decisions, precise decisions, do the mundane things that move the chains. And all the great quarterback coaches I've ever been around, that's the one thing that they preach, is do the mundane things that move the chains. That's what you need to be able to do on a consistent basis.
Redshirt freshman, this offseason, normal fundamental growth. He will get better, norm fundamentally. He's going to get stronger. I think the one area, if you watch, though, he has to improve on his accuracy on deep throws. You're always going to be a little off here or there, but that is the one area that points were left many times on the field because of throws that were not accurate down the field. Now, if he does that, he will be one of the elite quarterbacks in the country. He may be anyway, because he is so talented. He's going to get better. He's a hard worker. But deep throws, accuracy on those deep throws, those takeoff routes, those skinny post routes, that's what will put him at the next level.
Doug, how does the backup quarterback situation look for next year?
Young, very, very young. You got Nico. Jake Merklinger was a signed redshirt freshman. He is a redshirt freshman. He will be next year. They signed George McIntyre out of Nashville, highly recruited. The one area, Gaston Moore, who was the backup this year, fifth year younger, he can return. He has another year left. Now, whether he will or not, I don't know. He did walk on senior day in Neyland Stadium, but he has another year left. It's my understanding he wants to go into coaching. So if he comes back, they got a veteran player there. But without question, Merklinger, and then they'll bring McIntyre along. Now, one good thing about McIntyre, he will be there for spring practice. He's going to be an early enrollee. But we know how difficult it is to play in this league without any experience as a true freshman or a redshirt freshman. And that's what the backups are going to be in this instance.
Yeah, and is there a veteran out there? And of course, that's their world, and they know it much better than I do as to who's out there. But is there a veteran that's willing to come in and be a backup but be able to learn under Heupel and to learn that system or something close to it. A veteran quarterback, if that is possible, that might be an addition.
Here's the problem with that. Not with the thought on that, but you got Jake Merklinger there, who redshirted, so he'll be a redshirt freshman next year. What do you tell him when you bring in? He's going to be the backup quarterback. What do you tell him when you bring in another guy? So that's part of the transfer portal thing that you kind of have to look at. Now they may well have an understanding with them. He knows he's going to sit for a year, but that's why I think if Gaston Moore stays, that'll kind of even that out just a little bit.
Going hand in hand with Nico's development, the wide receiver core. You had four players finish with 25 plus receptions. Maybe a bit of a surprise that Dante Thornton's number of catches, the lowest of the four.
Well, and one thing, too, about the number of catches, and overall catches for that matter, Tennessee went to much more of a running game this year in many, many of the ball games. Now, Coach Heupel's always ran the ball a good bit, but even more so this year. Thornton's area of the problem that he had, quite frankly, was really primarily because of injuries. He was injured almost all the year. Not injuries that keep you out of the ball game, but, you know, a little hamstring here, a shoulder there. For much of the season, he was not at full speed. He will be at full speed in this Ohio State game, though. And this is the one guy, 6'5", outstanding speed, really good on the combat catches down the field, and really good at slants because he's going to be 2-3 inches taller than any defensive back he goes up against in this playoff.
Well, he's an explosive receiver, and that's what he is. The word combat catcher fits him to a T. But Coach makes a good point, and that was a major point. They leaned on the run game really hard this year, really hard. And when you've got a top guy that's nicked up a little bit, that's not quite at full speed, maybe the balls don't. Now, when they did throw the deep ball to him, he did make a lot of explosive plays. But his involvement this year, I think, had less to do with the fact that, if anything, of his ability, I think it was, first of all, the nagging injuries, and second of all, they were leaning on the run game quite a bit.
Well, and getting back to the injury situation, really three of their four starting wide receivers and three of the three when they only had three in the ballgame. Brew McCoy was injured much of the year with a hand. He's back full speed. We talked about Thornton. He's back full speed. Brazel, same, back full speed. And Squirrel White had a shoulder injury that limited him at the end. So with 3 weeks off, all four of these guys are going to be back for this ball game at least. I don't know how much they'll use them, but they're going to be healthy.
Yeah, well, the one guy that was mentioned by Coach that kind of stood out to me, I really like what he's got, is the Brazel kid. He's 6'5", he's 200 pounds, he can run. He's got extreme great spatial ability, and with the ball in the air, he can jump. He had 28 catches for 325 yards and two touchdowns with nearly a 12-yard average. I think this is a young, developing threat. I like this kid.
Well, three of those four guys we talked about were transfer portal players, and kind of looking forward to next year. Brew McCoy's out of eligibility, so is Thornton. They've had two younger players who have already entered, wide receivers who have entered the transfer portal. Brazel could enter the transfer portal, and it's my understanding he is looking at it. So this is going to be a team next year you got Squirrel White coming back. He might be the only guy that has any significant playing time back. Mike Matthews started playing, and a young man named Staley, very, very talented freshman. I don't think there's any question that Coach Heupel will hit the transfer portal in that area again. What has he been looking for? They're all the same, Mac. 6'3", 4", or 5", every single one of them, and all of them have outstanding speed. So I would suspect there'll be a young man or two we'll be talking about next year on this show that's not on this team right now.
Well, and that's why I say, I mean, you need some reinforcement behind those starters, and you didn't play. They don't play a lot of receivers at one time, but the ones they play a lot, and they've got a specific role for each one of them. You don't play many of them, but you need some reinforcements there without a doubt.
Well, not playing many of them is an understatement. They rarely play more than four wide receivers anyway for those three positions. So they don't need a whole lot of depth, but we saw injuries this year. Didn't hurt them a whole lot at the end of the season. But you know you're going to have those, and you would like to have a little bit more depth.
Maybe the biggest development in the passing game, the tight end spot, Myles Kitzelman, 21 catches and about 14 yards a catch.
Well, this is a great example of using the transfer portal to get something that you need. And the tight end helps this offense in a couple of ways. First of all, it's a matchup issue versus defenses that go small to cover the spread. That's number one. It opens up the middle of the field in the vision of the quarterback. Tight ends are vital to this run game, especially the way you run the inside and the outside zone and the counter gap schemes. You've got to be able to secure edges. The low red zone throws, the roll boot targets, tight ends are critical to this offense. Kinselman was a huge, huge get.
Well, he came in last spring, really was not noticed a whole lot, and really the first few games of the year did not play a whole lot, nor was he big in any of the game plans. One thing about him, though, Mac, where'd he come from? He came from an Alabama program. He had spent 4 years in that Alabama program before he came up here, so you knew he was going to be a fundamentally tough kid. He had a really big year the last half of the season, all phases. He was an excellent pass blocker. He was an excellent run blocker. He had key catches. I thought he was one of the most valuable volunteers on that whole offense.
Just look, you talk about the and really coming on at the end of the year, the coaches talk about, he had 21 catches, 296 yards, 14-yard average, as you said, Larry, long of 31. He had four touchdowns. This guy was a valuable, valuable piece as a transfer portal player, as a one-year transfer portal player. This guy was a valuable addition.
Now, the longer the season went, the better he played, and I would expect that that will continue through the playoffs.
Driven by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office, this is Coach to Coach. Our coaches are ready with lessons, X's and O's, and insight.
When the arena lights dim for a concert, or when the crowd becomes one at a big game, you can almost feel like you're the biggest fan. But who's your biggest fan? It's the person that will get you home safely after a night of drinking. It's the person who looks out for your life to make sure you leave the stadium with someone sober. This could be a designated driver or someone who offers to get you a rideshare. Because in Tennessee, fans don't let fans drive drunk. Brought to you by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office, a division of the Tennessee Department of Safety and Homeland Security.
At Great Clips, they know you got a lot going on just like I have. That's why they save my haircut details and clip notes, so I can get the same haircut as the last time whenever I want. No stress, no worries, no questions asked. And with 60 salons in the Middle Tennessee area, it's easy to find a Great Clips location near you. I've been a client of Great Clips for over 10 years, and if you're looking for a great cut, simply download their online check-in app today. Great Clips, it's going to be great.
Whether you're a big-time college coach or run a business, success demands five-star talent. The same is true for your heavy lifting equipment. Hi, I'm Dwayne Hardy from Forklift Systems. Our team will perform a free productivity, safety, and cost analysis of your fleet. We'll identify your MVPs and let you know which equipment to trade or cut. Remember, if you're not improving, your competition is. Win championships with your customers. Visit ForkliftSystems.com today.
Fill the halls with shouts of winning, fa-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la. Tis the season to be giving, fa-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la. Instant games to friends and family, fa-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la. Join the joyous cash prize carol, fa-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la.
With top prizes up to $500,000, holiday instant games from the Tennessee Lottery make grand gifts. Find them at your nearest Tennessee Lottery retailer today. Please play and gift responsibly.
Counting down to Ohio State and Tennessee in the college football playoffs, this is Coach to Coach as we look at the Vols' offensive lessons from this season. Not just offense, but really across the board. Doug, one of the areas that you believe the coaching staff needs to focus, penalties.
Well, and one thing heading into these playoffs, all right, got 3 weeks there. You cannot afford to lose games because of penalties, because you're playing the top well, three or four teams in your games in the country. Holding on offense, it's been a problem all year long, but the tackles primarily. Defensive offsides, many of just lining up offsides, which is really unforgivable, and sloppy face mask penalties. You cannot give up 15 and 10-yard penalties against the team, either giving them an advantage on offense or taking the advantage away from you from yourself on offense. You just simply have to get those under control. You can't have over 35, 40 yards in penalties in big ball games and not be behind on the chains.
Thing I always used to look at with penalties when I would go over every week there's two kind of penalties. There's competition penalties. They're subjective when they're called. You live with those. That's playing the game. But the unforced errors is what Coach Matthews is talking about here. Unforced errors are mentals. That can't happen. Those mental errors, the only way to stop those mental errors is replace the player, because that's the only punishment you have. If he's your best player, but the mental errors are what we are talking about. Competition penalties, they are going to happen. And also, let's go into this a little bit too. As a coaching staff, you always scout who the officiating crew is, what they call, how heavy they are in one form or another, inform your players about this. You understand it. But to me, I could live with competition penalties. I can't live with unforced errors.
No, we used to call them, they're selfish penalties too. When you get in a shoving match or a pushing match or a mouthing match where you get a unsportsmanlike conduct penalty, that's just selfish. You're hurting your football team. You know, sometimes it's okay to hold or protect your quarterback. You know, sometimes you're going to inadvertently grab a face mask. But you cannot win close ball games doing that. You know, you can approach that two ways. Number one, the head coach has to handle that situation. And there's two ways to approach it. And I've worked with head coaches who do it both ways. Some believe that, hey, let's don't really talk about it, put an emphasis on that to make them be thinking about getting those penalties. And then others is just what Mac said. Hey, you're going to be sitting over here, standing over on the sideline with me if we don't get these things out of your repertoire out on the field.
Vols had a generational talent in Dylan Sampson. Doug, amongst all the things that he accomplished this season, what's the one thing that stands out to you?
He had that, what a running back coach and a running back would call the feel for seeing those holes, and I use seeing not from, you feel those holes and hitting that. He was excellent at making the right cut, Mac, and hitting those right holes. A lot of other things he did well, but if you don't have that feel, you're just going to be a pretty good running back. You have that feel for where the blocking is and how to hit it. Maybe just slow down a little bit and let it develop. Sometimes you got to hit it quickly to get through that gap. He had that feel for that. I thought that was his greatest quality.
Yeah, the thing that stood out to me, I loved his consistent toughness. This is a tough, physical runner. You never saw him. His head was always finishing ahead of his feet. You never saw him knock backwards. He was always moving forward. He's the same foot, same shoulder back. He delivers a lot of power. He's got tremendous contact balance. But his consistent toughness, that is what stood out to me.
Hey, he's not all that big. You know, he's about 5'10", probably was 190, but he packs a lot of power, as Max said. The skills, though, that just stood out, running the ball is one thing. He also was an excellent receiver, and he was an excellent pass protector. And in this offense, where many times you don't only have five offensive linemen, you don't have a tight end there to help you, your running back has to be an excellent pass blocker, either individually one-on-one or helping out inside. But there's not a phase of the game that he wasn't good in.
Do you see enough behind him to feel good about the running back room heading into next season?
I do. Deshaun Bishop's a freshman, 5'10", 200. He had 67 carries this year for 433 yards, three touchdowns, over a 6.5-yard average. Peyton Lewis, a freshman, number 27. He's 6'1", 210, 54 carries, 262 yards, three touchdowns, 5-yard average. Cam Seldon, he's a sophomore. He's a bigger back, 6'2", 222. 23 carries, 118 yards, a 5'1 average. And then Khalifa Keith is a sophomore, 6'1", 239 pounds, 21 carries. They leaned on the run game. 21 carries for 100 yards, one touchdown, five-yard average nearly. I feel good about what they've got there.
Well, all these guys are sophomores. Cam Seldon's a sophomore. All the rest of them are either sophomores, freshmen, or they got a couple of early enrollees coming in. And that's the one position in college football, that in major college football, that you can come in and contribute as a true freshman. Peyton Lewis was a true freshman this year. Dwayne Morse, a young man out of Murfreesboro, outstanding player. Justin Baker out of he's coming in out of Georgia. So the question mark, I think, is pretty much settled. But remember, Sampson has another year if he wants to come back. Now, Mac knows all about how the grades go in the NFL. I cannot believe he's not going to be a high draft choice. But that's a position that they don't maybe draft quite as high. I would suspect, too, that maybe Khalif Keith has already entered the transfer portal. But they're going to have three or four, maybe even five running backs that they can fit in there, and all of them have the ability to run the ball, and they're going to have to learn how to pass block.
That brings us to maybe one of the biggest offseason concerns at the end of our offensive analysis, and that is the offensive line. Doug, Tennessee is going to need to replace six of its top seven along that line. Just on paper, that seems like quite a task. Have you been through situations where you've had to replace that much talent?
Have not. Now, while that was a plus this year, it is going to be a – I don't want to say it's going to be a negative, but it's going to be a challenge next year. Listen, it's not clear who really – there's two players. Lance Hurd's coming back. You have to anticipate he's played left tackle. They normally move their left tackle as he gets more experience to right tackle in this offense. They got Larry Johnson there, who is a junior college youngster who played a good bit. He's a tackle position also. But it's really not clear who the others are going to be because no one really played much this season. The only criticism that I have is the fact that that's the one area where Tennessee does not develop younger players. Now, three out of the five starters this year were transfer portal players. This is an area where Tennessee will bring in another or two offensive linemen out of the transfer portal. You can bet on that.
That's going to be quite a lift right there. So the transfer portal, they're going to have to hit that. I mean, without a doubt, they're going to have to hit the transfer portal for the offensive line. Well, but this year's offensive line performance, let's go back to that. I thought they were excellent at the center guard triangle, especially versus the run. Their center guard triangle all year was really, really strong, really good. The pass pro issues were on the offensive tackles when singled up on the edge. Also, too many false starts out there on the edge at the offensive tackle. So if I were going to sum it up, I would say you had really a lot of strength up the middle, and you still needed work on the edge.
In this offense, many times you're going to be playing with only those five offensive linemen in there. You're not going to have your tight ends in there. So those fast, speedy pass rushers on those tackles, that is a tough matchup. One of the reasons why, quite frankly, you almost could include the tight ends, Mac, as part of the offensive line in this offense, because they played many a times they played with two tight ends there to both help the run, but also certainly to help slow down those edge pass rushers that we see so many outstanding ones in this league that are going to be higher draft choices every single year. It's a tough matchup, those offensive tackles.
So retooling the offensive line, growth at quarterback, other overriding goals for this offense going into the offseason?
The good thing is this, they have a lot of younger players, and I mean a bunch of younger players, those soakers that we talked about. So, looks to me like where they're gonna have to fill holes is on the offensive side of the ball. Offensive line, we've already discussed. They've brought in an offense. Coach Heupel has brought in. He's been there 4 years. Every single year, he has brought in at least one offensive lineman. He's brought in at least one tight end. Several years, multiple, and he's brought in one wide receiver. I think that will be true this year also. Those are the three areas on offense that they will bring players into to, for lack of a better term, fill those holes in the areas they don't have. Now, they have a lot of younger offensive linemen that have been down there soaking. They have seven or eight young guys that are freshmen, redshirt freshmen, or second-year players. Tight end, they have the Davis youngster has been down there soaking. but they don't have depth there. And then wide receiver, which we discussed a little earlier, they're certainly going to have to hit the transfer portal in that area for sure.
Well, the one huge advantage they have, though, they have settled now into an offensive scheme. They know exactly the type of players they need to fill these areas that we are talking about. This offensive scheme is settled in. They know it. They know what they want. They know what they need into it. That's a huge advantage going into talent acquisition periods.
Let's spend a few minutes on special teams, which continues to be a strength under Josh Heupel. What stood out to you about the Vols' kicking units?
Well, the kicking operation, first of all, the battery, the long snapper, the punter, the place kicker, they were solid. They were solid. That was consistent. Punt returns were adequate. Catching the ball, making good decisions back there, they were really good. Kickoff coverage, when younger players were in the game, needs lane discipline work, especially even at the end of the season. We saw it in the Vandy game. But I thought overall the kicking game was a strength for this team.
Well, and the pooch punting by Ross, how many times, how many games was the opponent's offense put inside the 20, even inside the 10, even inside the 5? Punt coverage teams were excellent. Kickoff coverage could be a little spotty every now and then. But, Mac, here's the thing about kickoffs. 90%, a little over 90% of kickoffs in college football are touchbacks or fair catches. Nobody really returns them anymore. Big plus, though, the kicker is back. Gilbert is back as a kicker. He has 3 years remaining. Turbyville and Ross. Turbyville kicks that ball off so deep. He's the backup kicker. And Ross, the punter, all those guys are back with at least 2 years eligibility. This is a strong, strong group. Main emphasis is going to have to be on the punt and the cover. That's the main emphasis in a ball game. You know, you're going to kick the ball in the end zone, but if you can back that team up, that old hidden yardage inside their 20-yard line, and a big leg kicker like Ross can do that, that is so huge. But you also got to cover them.
Well, right, and the more experience your players get doing that on special teams, there's nuances to coverage. You know, people think you're just running down the field, you know, like wild men, like Braveheart, going running into each other at 100 miles an hour. That's not the way it works. I mean, you got to have nuances. You got to have lane discipline, learn to play off one another in the lanes. But the coverage teams, the more experienced players on those coverage teams that you can sprinkle in there, and the other younger ones that can gain experience as the season goes on, that only strengthens your coverage unit.
Play calls. Official calls. Wrong calls. We break it all down. Driven by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office. This is Coach to Coach.
When the arena lights dim for a concert, or when the crowd becomes one at a big game, you can almost feel like you're the biggest fan. But who's your biggest fan? It's the person that will get you home safely after a night of drinking. It's the person who looks out for your life to make sure you leave the stadium with someone sober. This could be a designated driver or someone who offers to get you a ride share. Because in Tennessee, fans don't let fans drive drunk. Brought to you by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office, a division of the Tennessee Department of Safety and Homeland Security.
When it's time for the big game, big fans need big TVs, and at Double Dogs, you can even satisfy big appetites. With choices like Black Angus Burgers, wings tossed in homemade sauces, and dog bowl nachos, well, Double Dogs will make sure you get the fuel you need for lunch, dinner, or even a post-game snack. So whether you have two legs or four, you can cheer on and chow down at Double Dogs. Visit DoubleDogs.biz to view the menu and order online. Double Dogs. Sit. Stay. Eat.
You know, starting to save for your future doesn't have to be difficult. Let Wilson Bank and Trust help tone up your financial goals this year. Our certificates of deposits or CDs can help your money work harder with our competitive rates, earning you more than ever before. WBT checking options allow you to earn rewards you can really use, like a high interest rate or cash back on check card purchases when you meet some e-banking qualifications. Visit your closest Wilson Bank and Trust office or online at wilsonbank.com to get started today. Member FDIC.
Whether you're a big-time college coach or run a business, success demands five-star talent. The same is true for your heavy lifting equipment. Hi, I'm Dwayne Hardy from Forklift Systems. Our team will perform a free productivity, safety, and cost analysis of your fleet. We'll identify your MVPs and let you know which equipment to trade or cut. Remember, if you're not improving, your competition is. Win championships with your customers. Visit ForkliftSystems.com today.
Army-Navy Saturday, and then the bowl bonanza begins. This is Coach to Coach. Early signing period for the Volunteers. Doug Matthews, what does this recruiting class look like for Tennessee?
Well, we have talked about the early signing period and the later signing period. Really, it's all the early signing period. Now, almost every team has signed in the mid-20s. Tennessee signed 25 this year, 11 on offense, 14 on defense, and it's another very strong class. You know, you have to build from the ground up. When I get asked about, you know, where you rank, are you 1, 2, 3, where you are in the rankings after the recruiting, really, if you're a top 15 team recruiting, you're going to be have enough good players that if you develop them right, and with the addition of the transfer portal, you're going to be able to play for championships on that.
All right, let's talk about the offensive prospects, and what do you see?
As I mentioned, 11 offensive signees. It all starts, either whether us old defensive coaches like them to talk about it or not, with quarterback. They got George McIntyre coming in, young man here from Nashville, Tennessee, McIntyre family, you know, coaching family. That's they're only bringing in one. That's about all anybody else is bringing in. A couple of running backs, one here locally that they're really, really high on. And if you look just down the list, they've signed three offensive linemen, they've signed three wide receivers, and two tight ends. One of the offensive linemen is this Sanders youngster who's out of North Carolina. He was the number one offensive lineman in the country. Rumor has it, and I think this is pretty good rumors if you get my drift, Mac. He is the first offensive lineman that has been signed in a long time that will be that first year in the million-dollar-plus name, image, likeness. I would suspect, we were talking about how Tennessee does not play a lot of younger players. I would suspect that if a young man is making that much money, he may see a little play time this year.
What do you see on the defense among Tennessee's early prospects?
14 players there, and really, defensive line, 6. All right, they're losing 3 to graduation, maybe a fourth. Well, most likely a fourth, and James Pierce Jr. on that. Again, physical, strong. They always go for those edge rushers. They've been able to get some really good younger players in that area. 3 linebackers, I mentioned, then 5 defensive backs. Couple of key things on this, and you always, when you look back at the great or really good Tennessee teams, one thing stands out to you. The majority of their players are either from Tennessee or Georgia. In this signing class of 25, 7 from Tennessee, 7 from Georgia. So what, over 60% are from those two. North Carolina is another state that's important. They got 3 out of North Carolina. 25 of them, though, again, and something that has really taken over college football now, of those 25, 22 of them are going to be in there for in January, early enrollees. That means that they will have the ability, at least, to play early next fall, some of them. The young man I was talking about is David Sanders out of Concord, North Carolina. Big, 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 big-time football player. 6'6", 285, highly recruited by every major college in the country.
So the early signing period moved this year to the same week as the championship games. The transfer portal opened a few days later. I tell you what it does, Dave. It really makes it challenging for a program that wants to change coaches.
Well, it absolutely does, Larry. And here's what you're going to do. If you're in the decision-making process of that, you got to make a decision early. The later you wait, the bigger risk you are taking of opening up your entire roster to the transfer portal. So timing is critical on this.
Well, and this new calendar, this is what coaches wanted. This is what they voted for as a group. All right? The positives out of it is, by early December, first week in December, you know who you're recruiting, who signed for that year, so you don't have to worry about that. And you also know who's in the transfer portal because that has already been decided also. Whenever you fire a head football coach in college football, every player on that team, including anybody that has signed that's not on that team yet, can go into the transfer portal. So you're kind of damned if you do and damned if you don't on this. And that's why I was a little surprised that I think we only had 2 or 3.
The thing about it is, though, as the three of us sit here and talk about it on this program, everybody has got the same rules. Everybody is under the same restrictions. And as coach mentioned, the coaches voted on this. They wanted this. And so this is what you wanted. This is what you get.
Well, and this is why they voted for it. With the early signing period, it's only been around a couple of years, with the transfer portal right at the same time, that means that you spend the weekends in the summer that normally you have off having players come on and visit, because you have to bring them in June and July and August to be able to get them in before, because you can't bring them in during the season. So the early signing period, that is brought about because of the transfer portal primarily, and players leaving, and coaches, assistant coaches in particular, have to spend much of their summer months on campus.
The why, the how, real analysis on how to win this weekend.
Coach to Coach, driven by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office.
When the arena lights dim for a concert, or when the crowd becomes one at a big game, you can almost feel like you're the biggest fan. But who's your biggest fan? It's the person that will get you home safely after a night of drinking. It's the person who looks out for your life to make sure you leave the stadium with someone sober. This could be a designated driver or someone who offers to get you a rideshare. Because in Tennessee, fans don't let fans drive drunk. Brought to you by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office, a division of the Tennessee Department of Safety and Homeland Security.
Pay the order of hope, promise, tomorrow. For years, the Tennessee Lottery has written some pretty big checks, but it turns out that our biggest winner continues to be education. In fact, we've raised more than $7.5 billion and provided more than 2 million scholarships and grants for Tennessee students. Learn more about how lottery dollars are making a difference at tnlottery.com. It's game-changing, life-changing fun.
There are a lot of physical therapists in Tennessee, and you don't want to go to a therapist. You want to choose the therapist that is right for you. This is Charles Davis. I had injuries in my playing days and valued the importance of a quality rehab program. I know and trust these folks, which is why I would choose Star when in Tennessee, and you should too. Their clinicians have world-class advanced training to make them great mechanics of the human body and to get you better fast. Find a Star location near you at starpt.com.
At Great Clips, they know you got a lot going on just like I have. That's why they save my haircut details and clip notes, so I can get the same haircut as the last time whenever I want. No stress, no worries, no questions asked. And with 60 salons in the Middle Tennessee area, it's easy to find a Great Clips location near you. I've been a client of Great Clips for over 10 years, and if you're looking for a great cut, simply download their online check-in app today. Great Clips, it's going to be great.
Next week's Coach to Coach, the Vols defensive lessons, and we break down the Ohio State Buckeyes. Doug Matthews, how's the coaching staff using these 2 weeks before we really get into Ohio State preparation?
Let's say they're going to have a two-hour practice. Probably an hour of that will be with your starting group, and then they'll send those young guys in, maybe weightlift, whatever, those older guys. That next hour is so valuable. This is where bowl games in the past have been so valuable, if you get to go to a bowl game. At 10 or 12 practices to work with those soakers, those young guys down there who are going to get any better. So what you do, you have two different categories. You have the starters, and the guys are going to play a lot. And then you have the younger players, individual attention that you're unable to give them during the season.
Coach to Coach, driven by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office. In Tennessee, fans don't let fans drive drunk.
Coach to Coach.